You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Well, this is an official Fiesta event. Coronation is one of the most popular Fiesta things during Fiesta Week. Coronation can be traced back as early as 1951. It was originally staged by SALT, the San Antonio Little Theater, the Arneson River Theater. But since then, it's gotten a lot more sort of interesting. The show's irreverent. It pokes fun of politicians. It is kind of raunchy at times. It is certainly probably the highlight of the year for many folks who love to get on stage and just rip, roar, and be jolly. We're joined by Amy Stone. She is the author of a new book, Coronation, San Antonio's Outrageous Fiesta Tradition, and she's a professor at Trinity University. Her area studies include lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender politics, and the incorporation of the LGBT individuals who into communities and cities. And you live in Austin?
I just moved there, yes.
Oh, so you're no longer at Trinity?
I am at Trinity.
Oh, still. And she has a book signing tonight, a reception talk book signing for Amy Stone's new Coronation book. It's at Trinity University's Holt Center, and it's at 4 o'clock, and it's free and open to the public. Also with us is Joey Palacios. He's the Texas Public Radio reporter. He's also appeared in many Coronation events. And also with us is Jesse Mata. He's a Fiesta Coronation board member and script writer. So what are your favorite Coronation moments? Because it is a pretty outrageous event. People talk about it all year long. But Amy Stone, first tell us, why did you write this book?
Well, that's a good question. So I first went to Coronation in 2009, and I had been told by a colleague that this is the Fiesta event to go to, that I would have so much fun. And I remember going in the middle of writing this really depressing book about anti-gay politics. I was like, oh, this book is just killing me. And I sat down in the theater, and on stage comes Cheryl Sculley in this like tight costume, essentially.
Like Superman or
like Superwoman, yeah. And she had this big cape and these stiletto boots, and she was like dancing on stage, and then all these other people came out, started dancing and making fun of like politics, and it was just really rich and fun and campy and wonderful. And I thought, how in the world did they get the city manager to dance on stage for like three nights in a row? Like, what city am I living in? I had sort of just moved here a few years before, and it really spurred my interest in the show. And that was the beginning of the book.
Our phone number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. If you want to join our conversation, we'd love to hear your Coronation story. Jesse Mata, how did you come to know Coronation?
When I moved back to San Antonio, much like Amy, I got involved in Fiesta events, and the same thing. I was told this is the thing to go to. So for a couple of years, I went, and I can recall some of the great skits that I saw about the Alamo Heights cheerleaders and just, you know, great camp, great incisive humor. And I thought, I have to be a part of this. And so I knew through work the script writer, Rod Gonzalez, and he was able to get me in at first making props. My very first year, I made coffee cups for dancing coffee cups for our current MC, Elaine Wolf. She was in a skit that her brother designed. And so from there, I just started taking on bigger roles, designing a skit. The first skit I designed was about Martha Stewart and her conviction. And then, you know, started writing the script about a decade ago, joined the board as well. And so I've just fallen in love with it. It's a great way to connect with different communities in the city, to have a very diverse group of people come together for a great cause. And it's, you know, far and away probably my favorite time of year.
And Joey Palacios, the San Antonio Public Radio, Texas Public Radio reporter, what's your involvement with Coronation?
This is actually kind of my fifth year participating in Coronation. Started in 2012 with my friend Mark, who asked me to fill a vacancy in one of his skits. It was about Honey Boo Boo. And the name of the court that we had, because Coronation is a court system, I actually can't really say on air because it was a little offensive at the time, but it involved Honey Boo Boo with her first pageant and then coming back 20 years later for another pageant that was a little risque. Since then, I've been in about four different skits and in different groups, and I think my favorite part about Coronation is just the camaraderie backstage, that everybody comes together, nobody's paid to be a part of it. It's all coming together for this goal of providing money to the different AIDS charities here in San Antonio.
Jesse Mata, how many people participate in it each year?
We've got well over 200 volunteers, and actually, you know, the length of the show varies from year to year. You know, obviously, we don't have much to talk about this year, so it's not very big. But no, it's over 200 volunteers, and that ranges from people who are in the cast themselves, designers, the writers, MCs, stagehands, people who sell medals. I mean, it's a family affair. We see these people year after year, and there's a lot of love there. There's a lot of passion, and everybody comes together to execute it so well every year, and at this point we're giving away over $200,000 a year to our local charities. So we're probably one of the most prolific Fiesta events in terms of money that's returned back to the community.
Amy Stone, so you decided you were going to take a deep dive into corneation. What did you find?
Well, one of my favorite things was actually researching corneation in the 50s and 60s. That was kind of the deepest dive I think I took when I wrote this book.
So did you have to find individuals who had lived it, or is there some sort of archive?
Well, yes, to both of those things. I did find some people who were still alive who were in the show, and I also found all the old scripts from the 50s and 60s. They were hidden in a closet at the Playhouse. I don't think the Playhouse knew they had them. They were in these two manila folders.
And how did you find those folders then?
That was a whole summer. It was like I was on a quest. I had these two research assistants, and they thought I was obsessed with these scripts. I looked for them in archives all over town. We went everywhere. And then finally someone told me that I found an old script writer, this woman named Squeaky, I kid you not, who had written the script one year in the 60s. She said, you know, someone had taken all of her scripts from her and collected them at the Playhouse. And so I talked to the director of the Playhouse at that time, and they let me spend 2 or 3 days going through this closet of old stuff that they had. And they just sort of happened to be
in
there.
And then you found the folder.
I found the folder. I screamed.
Did music play or anything? was it Angels, you know, chorus?
You chorus found? Of drag queens.
For me, there was. So that was a huge discovery for me because I had read about the show in the paper and I had seen pictures. But to read what people were actually saying, the wittiness of it, the sort of the humor and the double entendre, and I really got a better feel for the show.
So this is really before the mainstreaming or acceptance, general acceptance of LGBTQ at all. How present was that?
Well, what I did find out was that many of the all the skits were designed by men, right? They sort of designed the outfits and they wrote the scripts. And a lot of those men were gay or were sort of known for being a group of men in occupations that were traditionally known for being gay occupations. They were window dressers. They were hairdressers. They were speech arts teachers. They were mostly unmarried. I looked them all up on Ancestry.com because I was curious. You know, I didn't want to make any assumptions. And from some of the women I interviewed who are in the show, they said, you know, a lot of people knew that these men were incredibly sophisticated and incredibly artistic, and they're sort of appreciated for that in the show. And so I think it was a really rich moment where people could appreciate this like very gay campy style at a time when people weren't really out, you know. But that said, corneation has always had a really diverse group of people involved in it. But I think it was a place where you could see some of that gay artistry. Really,
you know,
early
I mean, you can do parodies and send-ups and satire of you know, news and things like that without having like hasty pudding or whatever. There's all sorts of ways to attack mm-hmm. that topics, but to do it in a way, this is obviously its foundation and its roots come from its outsiderness. This was outside the outsider community. I mean, wasn't it? I mean, because the coronation, the original thing, is the celebration of the insiders. Mm-hmm. These are the folks, they have their big event, and the women with their big gowns and skirts and beaded things, and this is the other side of the coin.
It definitely was a reaction to the elitism of the coronation of the Queen of the Order of the Alamo. It was a direct satire of it in the early 1950s. And what's funny is that there are some people who were involved in both, like Russell Hill Rogers was involved in the Order of the Alamo, and he also was the scriptwriter for Coronation the first 7 or 8 years.
What were they making fun of in those original scripts?
The original ones were very focused on the coronation, making fun of the elaborate language used to describe each of the duchesses or queens or the empresses. They had a lot, like the first court was the court of the cracked salad bowl, and they had like the queen of parsley, you know, or the court of the glorified barnyard, right? Like they were really very intentionally making fun of the grandiose themes of the coronation, and very quickly it became political. Because there were so many political things going on in San Antonio, sort of the reorganization of city politics in the city.
The end of the Good Government League.
Yes, yeah.
Geographic representation for council, et cetera. Yeah.
All of that, they began responding to those politics. Though some of the first stuff, the Court of Outer Space in 1958, was focused on criticizing the Cold War, which I found, I was shocked they were doing this in the 50s.
Right, but so did you get the sense that these were a community that typically did not have a voice? They'd given a stage, and they were going to use their voice.
Definitely. I think it was one of the first major kind of middle class, you know, very diverse events in Fiesta, right? Okay. It wasn't run by the Cavaliers. It wasn't run by the Order of the Alamo. It was run by a bunch of people who loved to be in the theater and were from all over the city.
I'm going to take a call real quick. Angela. Angela, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How are you? I am Broom Girl. They all know me as
Broom
Girl.
Oh, no.
And these are just kids. These guys are just babies. They came much after me. I started in 92, and my sister designed one in 1980. So we have known in my family about coronation. And a lot of the people that designed costumes at first, they were guys and girls that had done the hair or helped with the costumes for coronation. And this was kind of their, you know, not slap at, but just kind of, you know, they saw the drama that went on between mothers and daughters and then got to take it and make it very campy and very funny and very San Antonio.
Okay, Angela, I'm going to take a quick break. I thank you for your call. I want to hear more from all of this, more memories of coronation. When we come back from the break, the number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Coronation, San Antonio's Outrageous Fiesta Tradition. It's a book by Amy Stone. There's a reception and talk and book signing tonight for Amy Stone's book. It's at Trinity University's Holt Center from 4 o'clock to 5:30. It's free and open to the public. And we're talking about coronation this afternoon. We've got Amy Stone here with us and also Jesse Mata. He's a Fiesta Coronation Board member and script writer. We invite you into our conversation as we talk about this seminal fiesta event. It's sometimes raunchy, but always pointed, always mocking the powerful and the self-important of San Antonio. 210-614-8980. How important is it to you that we have a coronation in San Antonio as part of Fiesta? 210-614-8980. Would it even be Fiesta without coronation? Jesse Mata, would it be Fiesta without coronation?
Absolutely not. Everybody needs a good dose of drag queens and salacious humor to really bring the season together. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's a family affair, but we're kind of like the Freemasons, you know, to be one, ask one. So people get involved into coronation by just coming backstage, meeting us at the stage door, expressing their interest, talking about their enthusiasm, the ideas they have. And that's part of the fun of coronation, is that we continuously welcome new blood into the show. It's continuously evolving. You know, the scripts used to rely heavily on very structured, formal language. There was rhyming couplets, iambic pentameter. It was very, very high camp. And we still embrace some of those traditions, like the very complex court names and our structure and that sort of stuff. But we've definitely taken a more political bent, a more conversational bent. And a lot of that is due to our fantastic MCs, Elaine Wolf and Rick Frederick, and our great designers, too, like Chris Sauter, John McBurney, Statue of Design folks, Rip Gipprich and David Garcia. All of those folks continue to kind of up the game for coronation year after year.
How soon do y'all start planning the next coronation?
So typically the board meets in November or December just to kind of get the logistical stuff out of the way, showtimes, ticket prices, the theme, et cetera. Then we start talking about who our King Anchovy is going to be that year. And one thing, if you ask, it's not going to happen. So there's that.
If you ask to be
a King Anchovy, yeah, that's a quick way to not be. But we talk about what we're going to do with
do
the
that?
Show. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. There's stories behind that. We'll talk off the air about it. So we start in November, December. We meet with the designers in January to kind of get an idea of what kind of topics they want to cover, the music they're going to use. And we do that so we don't have another what we call the Year of Single Ladies, where there were about, it's seemingly a dozen skits that use that song. But it's a months-long process, and then when we get into April, that's when we start thinking about the script. We like to keep it fresh, topical. We want to make sure that we have kind of the latest buzz written into our commentary. And so we do our best to kind of get it done very close to the show. And then Elaine and Rick help even more by ad-libbing throughout the show when things like, you know, people pass out and fall off of the stage onto tables or what have you.
So I think it was Voltaire said something like, show me who you can't make fun of and I'll show you who rules. So by looking at Corniation, we're able to see who they dare to make fun of. And so we're really seeing what was important at that time. So I think it's really important. And I hope those scripts that you have, that they are going to be available to the public to read or something, to dissect. Is that going to be like public access for those things to examine?
I'm happy to share them with whoever's interested. They are the property of the Playhouse, so I could talk to them about putting them into the public view. Several bits of the script are in the book. Mm-hmm. There's some pictures from those early years and from more recent years, and lots of script excerpts, just because I think it was just witty and brilliant, you know, those kinds of stuff that they wrote.
Let's go to a caller. The number to call in, 210-614-8980, Isabel. Hi, Isabel. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Interesting
Good.
Discussion. I do believe that Corniation is probably one of the more realistic and democratic events of the whole Fiesta show and tell, I guess. I boycotted all the parades and other activities downtown since 1986, which commemorated the 150th anniversary of the takeover of Mexican territory by the invaders from Tennessee and other less than honorable men. But I would applaud their continuation and their efforts to at least provide some intellectual or intelligent and truthful representation of life here in San Antonio is one of the most oppressive, economically speaking. And I don't understand why anybody of Hispanic origin would even go downtown and waste their hard-earned money on all this medicine-type activities. It's power driven, and it's I think less. It reminds me basically of the Roman circuses. You know, please the crowds and keep them happy, and don't let them think.
All right, bread and circuses keep the people pacified through that. But so there are Fiesta haters out there, you know, and
we don't allow tortillas anymore. So it's just the circus. No more bread.
No more bread.
No
more
unleavened bread.
We've gone gluten-free.
Gluten-free. That's good. But when your people say they look to Corniation as the counter to some of the things that they don't like about Fiesta, which can be the elitism and the celebrate, you know, the debutantes and all those type of things. And so they say Corniation, is that a lot of responsibility for you guys to bear, Jesse? Or you guys just want to have a good time?
Certainly we have a good time. And anybody who's been to the show, particularly the later shows on Thursday, can attest to the fact that we have a good time, sometimes at the expense of the show. But I think all of the designers, the
Because
MCs,
that's when there's a lot of inebriation going.
Possibly. There's rumors. But I think that the MCs, the designers, everyone who's involved with the show takes this very seriously. We understand that the audience expects something from us, expects entertainment, expects us to address these issues that really in no other venue of Fiesta are they addressed. And we connect with the community on multiple touch points as well. So obviously we have the experience of the show, but really Corniation, you know, we have our pre-parties with King Anchovy, we have participation in King William Fair, we have the actual donation of money to the charity. So we try to kind of make it as extensive and inclusive inclusive an event as possible. And everybody just everybody understands their role, and they don't want to disappoint the audience. They want to put on the best show possible.
But it is a fiesta, official fiesta
event. It isn't, yes, by our fingernails, barely a fiesta. No, I'm just kidding. It is an official fiesta event.
What does that mean, that it is an official fiesta
event? So we are able to advertise as such. The Fiesta Commission, you know, brings us under their auspices in terms of promotion, et cetera. I mean, it's a good relationship that we have with them. They're able to sell our tickets, medals, et cetera. In fact, tickets are still available at the Fiesta Commission as well as Ticketmaster.
But you don't have to tone anything down, right?
No, I will say that both the theater and the Fiesta Commission have been very incredible, really. I mean, there is no censorship. There is, you know, I will dial that back. We do have certain rules. Obviously, we don't do graphic nudity on stage. There are certain other things we don't allow. But for the main part, people are free to express themselves creatively on stage and get their point across. And there is not a lot of tone policing or anything like that. We only kind of manage at the extremes.
Amy Stone, what makes a good coronation skit?
For me, what makes it really good is taking something that's very serious and really making fun of it. Like, particularly with a twist, right? I love it when you're watching a sketch and you think you know where it's going, and then they go somewhere really unexpected. Those are some of my favorite ones for sure.
Give me an example.
So one of my favorite sketches was from the 2004, I think, and it was one about Michael Jackson and Neverland Ranch.
And the Neverland Ranch, sure.
Yeah, and it turned, they combined Neverland Ranch with the Peter Pan theme, right? So mm-hmm. First you're like, oh, the Lost Boys are going to Neverland
Ranch. And are you really a fairy?
Are you really a fairy, right? And there's all sure. These sort of plays on those words. But then it turned into this, like, showdown between the Lost Boys and the Pirates.
A dance-off,
yeah, which I thought was, like, really... brilliant. The same thing with Chris Sauter's skit that he did a couple of years ago that had NRA sort of politics, right? Sort of gun nuts and all of this stuff. And then the MCs all of a sudden shot everyone on stage and they turned into zombies from Thriller, right? I mean, I love those twists.
He's subtle. Really, I think that's what I like best about Chris Sauter is the subtlety. Yes.
Well, yeah. Sometimes when y'all will pull like a news event that people may have forgotten about, and bring it forward again and say, oh, I forgot about the solo serve debris floating down the river walk, you know, and the order of the solo serve river parade.
Are you going to do a skit? Yeah. Are you joining us this year?
I'm always open for, a route on stage. But so in your book, I mean, you're talking about the importance of this being an outlet for the LGBTQ community of San Antonio. Was this a way for the community to establish a complex but a relationship with establishment San Antonio?
I think it's a really complex question. I do know that it has been a place where if you are someone who lives in San Antonio and you want to see some really good campy fun, like, Coronation has always been a place where you could see that and see it in an unabashed way, right?
Yeah, but there's other cities have things like fiesta. You know, mm-hmm. Every city has their fiesta, and it doesn't matter what it is. It's always sometimes really hokey, but not every city has a coronation, right?
No. Though I have been looking at similar kinds of events in other cities, but this is, I think, a very unique event in the Southwest.
Uh-huh. Especially in terms of the charitable component
and the longevity
of it. Yeah.
I think it's phenomenal how much money has been raised.
Over $2 million yeah. over
well
the course.
Over. Yeah, I think we may even cross $3 million plus this year because, like I've said, over the past 10, 15 years, we've gone from, sub-$100,000 to well over $200,000 a year. And that's through the generosity of our patrons, through the folks who attend the parties, the folks who come buy the tables, buy our medals. And
where do you get tickets?
You can get them at Ticketmaster.com, the Majestic Box Office, and the Fiesta Commission Store, as well as CornyAngels@gmail.com. There's some special seating available for Tuesday late.
Where do you get the book?
The book is available also at Coronation, and it will benefit the Coronation fundraising, and also at The Twig and anywhere you can buy books online.
Trinity University Holtz Center has a book signing tonight for Amy Stone's new Coronation book. Check it out. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.